sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Welcome back, everyone. We are maybe halfway through the text, and we'll continue. Start with the first verse as usual. Kakhalunalankriyat. Louder. Manish, can you up that volume a little bit? Thank you. Yeah. If you can't hear, please move in front. No, because it's very echoey. So please move up in front. Maybe reduce it. No, but it's very echoey. So the recording will... If you can't hear, please... Or there are assistive listening devices, if anybody... It would help. I'm sorry, because we are very particular about how the recording... shows up, comes up. It is echoey to my ear, but I'm not a... Okay. Kakhalunalankriyate, kakhalunalankriyate, Drishta drishtartha sadhana patiyan, Drishta drishtartha sadhana patiyan, Amuya kanthasthitaya, Amuya kanthasthitaya, Prashnotararatna malikaya, Prashnotararatna malikaya. Kakula kamala dineshaha, kakula kamala dineshaha, satiguna vibhave piyo namraha, satiguna vibhave piyo namraha. Kasya vashe jagadetat, kasya vashe jagadetat, priyahita vachanasya, priyahita vachanasya, Dharma niratasya, dharma niratasya. Vidwan manoharaka, vidwan mano. Satkavita bodhavanita cha, satkavita bodhavanita cha. Kam naspruśati vipattihi, kam naspruśati vipattihi. Pravruddha vachananu vartitam dantam, Pravruddha vachananu vartinam dantam. Kasmai spruhayati kamala, kasmai kamala, tu anala sachitaya, tu anala sachitaya, niti vrittaya, niti vrittaya, tyajati chakam sahasa, tyajati chakam sahasa, dvijaguru suranindakaran, dvijaguru suranindakaram cha salasyam. It's very difficult, you know, these are verses, but we are not chanting them as verses. So in my head, I'm struggling with the chanting, because you have to, when you recite, you have to make the sandhis without, pausing at the right places. Kutra vidheyo vasaha, kutra vidheyo vasaha, sajjana nikate athava kashyam, sajjana nikate athava kashyam, kah parihāryo deshah, kah parihāryo deshah, pishunayuto lubdha bhūpascha, pishunayuto lubdha bhūpascha, kena ashochyav purushah, kena ashochyav purushah, pranatakalat
कलत्रेण धीर विभवेन प्रणत कलत्रेण धीर विभवेन इह भुवने कशोच्यः इह भुवने कशोच्यः सत्यपि विभवे न यो दाता सत्यपि विभवे न यो दाता. सो वी एंडेड हियर लास्ट टाइम एंड दिस वाज आस्केन अशोच्य पुरुषः हु इज अ पर्सन हु इज doesn't have any problems, doesn't have any difficulty. Of course, there's no such person in this world who doesn't have difficulties. But the answer was the one who has a good, caring spouse. And then we saw extended that with a verse saying that three relationships are very difficult to get in our lifetimes and require a lot of punya. And those three relationships was a good son, a caring son, a loving spouse. The verse says wife, but we're going to extend it to... The wife can be very loving, but what if the husband is not? The wife's life is going to be miserable if the husband is not a loving a spouse or a caring person. And the third was a true friend. Who is a true friend? Someone who stands by you, whether in good times or bad times, and who's the same. In the sense, a true friend is not going to be judgmental when you are down in the dumps, but is going to try and encourage you, help you as best as he or she can. So a lot of punyam. And I would add to that three things, although it was not mentioned in that verse. How about a guru? I think that takes that's the icing on the cake. To get a genuine guru requires a whole load of punyam for us to have done. Okay. We are on verse 32. And I forgot, I have to welcome those people who are watching remotely online after the class is recording. I keep forgetting because I guess I'm not looking at the camera, I'm looking at all of you. So welcome to those of you who watch later. Kim laghutaya moolam, kim laghutaya moolam, prakruta purushe shuya yancha, prakruta purushe shuya yancha, ramadapikashuraha, ramadapikashuraha, Smara shara nihato na yas chalati. So kim moolam, what is the cause for what? Laghutaya. Laghutaya means disrespect or disgrace. What is despicable? And the answer in the second part of that first quarter, ya yancha. We've seen this word before. Yancha is the asking or begging for or requesting, pleading, requesting from whom? Prakruta purusheshu. Prakruta means unrefined, like Sanskrita is a refined language, literally that which is well made. Prakruta is somebody who is not cultured, basically an adharmic person. So the asking or taking help from an adharmic person is considered to be disgraceful, despicable. And why is this a problem? Firstly, sometimes we know very clearly whether a person is, if we know the person well, we know whether they are dharmic or adharmic and how their thinking is. But if we don't know the person very well, we may not know what their ulterior motives are. So why is it a problem asking for help from an adharmic person? One, because if they are known to be adharmic, then everybody, society knows that they're already disrespected. So association with them can bring you disrespect too. And there is a shloka in the Narada Bhakti Sutra which talks about dussanga. We've spoken a lot about satsanga in these classes, association with good people, keeping good company. Dussanga is the opposite. And it says, dussangaha sarvatha eva tyajyaha. Bad company, dussangaha, must be tyajyaha, must be shunned by all means, always. Remember in the last class we saw that charcoal metaphor? If you hold a piece of charcoal when it's hot, so charcoal was compared to an adharmic person. If you hold that piece of charcoal when it's hot, you're going to get burned. If you hold it when it's cold, your hand is still going to become black. Of course, you can wash it off. That's another issue. That's not part of the metaphor. So the idea is associating with adharmic people or taking help from adharmic people. One, if you take help from somebody who has, say you ask for a loan from a bank robber, right? And you know he or she is a bank robber. Some of that adharmic papam comes on to you. Even if you are using that money for dharmic activities, it's obviously not a good idea to ask for help from an adharmic person. And the second half of the verse, kaha shuraha, who is brave? Ramat api, who is braver than even Rama? Remember, Rama signifies, in the Ramayana, he signifies a dharmika purusha, a very brave person. And the answer is, smara shara nihato nihataha na yaschalati. Yaha na chalati, the one who does not waver or is not shaken. Shaken by what? Smara shara nihata. Hata means to strike down. So the one who is nihata, not struck down or not smitten or not lost by what? Shara, the arrows. Arrows of who? Smara. Now you're going to be wondering, if you don't know the Puranic literature, you may wonder, who is this Smara? But many of you have heard of Kamadeva. Kamadeva is considered to be the deity of love and desire. Somewhat similar to Cupid, you know, in Western culture, but the symbolism of Kamadeva is very different than what symbolism Cupid has. So Kamadeva is usually shown as a young, handsome youth carrying a bow of sugar cane and firing arrows tipped with fragrant flowers. And there is a story of Kamadeva. Many of you might know it, but I just thought I will share it. So there was a demon, of course, in the Puranas you're going to have demons, who was causing a lot of havoc. So he was disturbing people doing their doing their rituals and frightening people because he was a demon. But he had a boon that he could only be killed by one of Shiva's, Lord Shiva's son. And Shiva was in deep meditation in Kailasha. And there was obviously no prospect of Shiva breaking his samadhi and getting married or fathering a child. So what the gods did, they were desperate, so they took the help of this Kamadeva, this deity of desire and love. And Kamadeva went to where Lord Shiva was meditating. And as Parvati comes into the story, obviously, so Parvati is approaching Shiva to offer some flowers. Of course, she was going to do it very quietly. But Kamadeva drew his bow and fired these fragrant flowers at Shiva. And he fired an arrow at Shiva, and Shiva opened his eyes. I don't know how firing really soft, fragrant flowers can disturb one from deep samadhi, but it's a story, so take it with a pinch of salt. Shiva opened his eyes for a moment, and because those arrows were filled with love and desire, he had a pang, a flicker of desire for Parvati. But then, being Lord Shiva, he was in deep samadhi, he got disturbed and he got really angry. And his third eye opened and he burnt Kamadeva into ashes. But Kamadeva's wife was also apparently accompanying him. So she and Parvati pleaded with Shiva to please, you know, revive him, because ultimately Kamadeva did whatever he did, struck Shiva with the arrow, with a bigger purpose in mind. The bigger purpose was to get rid of the demon who was causing havoc on earth. So Shiva relented and he said, okay, I will bring Kamadeva back to life. But he brought him back to life, but in a disembodied form. So another name for Kamadeva is Ananga. Anga means body, Ananga, one without a body. And that's very symbolic, because love, when you think about love or any emotion, it doesn't have a physical form, right? It's a form, it's a emotional, mental aspect which cannot be seen by the eye, but it is felt by the heart, felt by the mind. And Kamadeva is also called Manmath. By the way, Shiva does get married to Parvati and they have a child, and obviously the child kills the demon. But Kamadeva is also known, many other names for Kamadeva, which I had heard a few, but I didn't realize the significance of them. One is Manmatha. Manas is mind. Mathanam is the churning. So the one who churns our mind. Madana means liquor or intoxication. So the one who intoxicates us. Kusuma Shara, we saw Shara is an arrow, and Kusuma the flowers, so the one whose arrows are flowers. And another name is Smara. Actually, in the verse it's there, Smara Shara. Smara literally means to remember. And significance of these names, for any of you who've been in love or are in love, many times, how does that feel? It's a great feeling, but it's also a very difficult feeling, right? When you are in love, it's very distracting. The mind is not focused. Well, it's not. The mind is focused on the object of love. It's not focused on what needs to be done, what is the task at hand. There's constant churning with emotions, remembering the loved one 24/7, constantly. Of course, in this world, in this time and age, texting, messaging. What happens if you don't hear back from your loved one? There's so much angst. So this intense desire, and love is a great thing, but you have to realize that it can also lead to a lot of negative emotions. How about insecurity? If you love somebody and the person doesn't love you back, what can you do? There's not much. You cannot control. You cannot make another person love you. You might be the best person on the planet. You might be the most loving person, the most dharmic person on the planet. But you can't force somebody else you can't make somebody love you. So when the person doesn't reciprocate the feelings, there is insecurity. How about jealousy? If you love somebody and that person doesn't reciprocate your feelings, but that other person maybe is talking to somebody else, so there's some jealousy that comes in. There is a loss of rational thinking. And when your emotions get overcome, overpowered with intense desire, so somebody who is yaha na chalati, who does not waver, who is not distracted by these intense desires. So even though the verse is talking about Shara or Kamadeva representing love, we can extend it to any intense emotion like anger, hatred, jealousy, any of those emotions. So one who has managed his or her desires, the one who is alert,
alert with respect to their own minds. Such a person is said to be Rama, braver even than Rama. An important distinction to make: true love versus clinging love. And I know many of you have heard this from Swamiji. True love, genuine love, is really just giving, caring, irrespective of whether the other person reciprocates your love and care, irrespective of whether the other person even accepts your love and care. You just care and love unconditionally. So that is true love, genuine love, versus this desire or lust or infatuation, which is the clinging love. That kind of love is born out of ignorance. Born out of ignorance because we think getting fulfilled by that other person will make us happy forever. If the other person reciprocates our feelings, we are going to be permanently happy. So that is stemming out of ignorance. It's stemming out of dependence, this clinging dependence, thinking that the other person is going to make us, give us peace and contentment forever. For those of you who have been in a relationship for decades, you know how the relationship changes over time. The person you married when you were 20 years old is no longer the same person at 60. I'm sure the values probably may, some parts of the person may remain the same, but there are many aspects of the person that has changed. And change is really a good thing. You know, you don't, if you look at a baby picture of yours when you were like a month old, are you the same person today? If you look at a picture today, obviously not. So you don't want to be that baby again, because there's a lot of growth that has happened. So being able to handle your desires, handle impulses, is being braver than Rama. Kim ahar nisham anuchintyam, kim ahar nisham anuchintyam, bhagavat charanam na samsaraha, bhagavat charanam na samsaraha, chakshushmanto. Chakshushmantaha, chakshushmantaha, apyandhake syuhu, apyandhake syuhu, ye nastika manujaha, ye nastika manujaha. So kim anuchintyam, what should be contemplated on, what should be thought of, what should be remembered, ahar nisham, day and night. So obviously not to take this, the words literally, but rather how should our attitude be as we go about doing our daily activities in our life, as we go about living, what should our minds be focused on? And the answer is Bhagavat Charanam, on the feet, the Charanam of Bhagavat, on the blessed feet or the feet of the Lord, na samsaraha. Our mind should not be focused on samsara. Here can be material world, not on spending time thinking of or contemplating on our frivolous activities, our desires turned outwards. And what is the significance of constant remembering of Bhagavat Charanam, constantly remembering the Lord? Obviously, like I said, it's not to be taken literally, because if we are remembering 24/7 the Lord's feet, we're not going to get anything done. But there's a shloka in the Bhagavatam that talks about why is this constant remembrance significant. And you see in many scriptures, they will talk about sharanagati, surrendering to the feet of the Lord. So the shloka from Bhagavatam says, Samashrita ye pada pallava plavam mahat padam punya yashaha murarehe. So ye samashritaha, those who have resorted to, those who take refuge in, where? There's a big compound word, Pada Pallava Plabam. Plabam means boat. In the boat of Pallava, literally means a flower bud, but you can take it as a lotus, because you see the lotus feet is often, the quote-unquote lotus feet is often referred to in scriptures as a blessed feet of the Lord. So the Pallava, the lotus, Pada, feet. So Pada, Pallava, Plavam, in the boat. So where to take refuge? In the boat of the lotus feet. And what kind of feet? Which are Mahat Padam Punya Yashaha, which are sacred and which are the source of blessings. And whose blessings? From whom? Murarehe. From Murari, Lord Krishna, but you can take it to any of your Ishtadevata. So this, since this verse comes from the Bhagavata Purana, it's talking about Krishna. And why? Why is this important? Bhavam buddhi vatsapadam param padam 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 yat vipadam na tesham. Lot of padam words are there, break it down. Bhavam buddhi vatsapadam. So vatsapadam, vatsa means a calf. So like the water that is held in the calf, in the hoof of a young calf, bhava ambudhi, the vast ocean, ambudhi means water, of existence, of samsara. So just as the vast ocean of samsara is compared to a small amount of water that is held in a calf's hoof, in that God's Bhagavat Charanam, and padam padam, at every step, yat vipadam na tesham. So at every step, for those who take refuge in the Lord's blessed feet, for them na vipadam, there is no suffering for them. So basically the verse is saying those who take shelter in the Lord's feet do not suffer. And this, a lot of the Vaishnava traditions have this elaboration of surrendering to Lord's feet, because it's a very bhakti-oriented tradition. So that's the first half of the verse. And the second half, kesyuhu, who are, in the first word, andhaha, the end of the first word, andhaha, who are blind, chakshushmantaha, even though they are chakshushmat, even though they possess eyes, api, even though they possess eyes. We saw in an earlier verse, in I think verse 21, a blind person was defined as one who did adharmic activities. Here it says, ye manujaha, those people are considered blind, who are nastikaha, who are... The common Western understanding of the word nastika is an atheist in the Western sense, one who does not believe in God. But in the Hindu definition, a nastika is one who does not accept the authority of the Veda, who does not accept that the Vedas are a pramana, a valid means of knowledge. And there are three main nastika schools. Just this is extra information, not part of the text. One is the charvaka, the materialists, who believe that only what can be seen by the senses exists. So nothing, they reject the Vedas. The Jainas, the Jain tradition, they follow the teachings of the Tirthankas. They're, I think, 24 Tirthankas. And they believe in an Atma, Karma, stuff like that. But they do not believe in the Vedas. They do not study the Vedas. And finally, Buddhists, who reject the ritualism of the Vedas. They focus on the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path to Enlightenment. So if you have Shraddha in the Vedas, why is having faith, having Shraddha in the Vedas important? Because the Vedas teach us who is Ishvara, who is, what is karma, what is karma phala. So only, you know, the law of karma and reincarnation. And how do you get moksha? So only if we trust the Vedas, if we have Vedas as we take Vedas to be a valid means of knowledge, we are considered astikas. And just a little extra. So in Indian philosophy, there's something called Shad Darshanam. Pramana is a valid means of knowledge. That is the method by which we arrive at the truth, accurate truth, rather than just having an opinion. And there are different schools of philosophy in the scriptures that accept different numbers of pramana, different things that can be a valid means of knowledge. Like I said, the Charvaka only accept the materialists only accept actual sense perception. But Advaita Vedanta, which we are all studying at this ashram, accepts six valid pramanas. Some of you might have heard these in Swamiji's Vedanta classes. And the definition is pratyaksha, anumana, upamana, shabda, arthapatti, anupalabdhi, bhedat, pramanani, shat. So there are six pramanas titled pratyaksham, which is perception. It's knowledge gained through the five senses and the mind. So when you say, I see a tree, you're using your eyes. The eyes are actually a sense organ is seeing the trees. And that is being translated or registered in your mind. So both the eyes and the mind are involved. Anumana, inference, which is reaching a conclusion based on a premise. And the famous example, if you see smoke in the distance, you're not able to see the fire, but you see the smoke in the distance, so you can infer that there must be a fire there. The third one is upamana, which is a comparison. So the knowledge that you gain, and our scriptures are filled with metaphors and comparisons. So there's an example given is if a cowherd goes to a forest and sees a cow, what he thinks, he sees an animal and he thinks it's a cow. Why? Because at home he's seen a cow. So he's comparing what he has seen to what he already knows. So that's a valid means of knowledge. Shabda or apta vachanam, words or verbal testimony, which is what our Vedas are about, the study of the Vedas. Arthapattihi is an assumption. So an assumption is a valid means of knowledge which is used to derive a fact that can otherwise seem unexplainable. So the example they give is Devadatta. Devadatta is like our Tom, Dick and Harry comparison in Western. So Devadatta is gaining weight. And Devadatta does not eat during the day. So if you see Devadatta gaining weight and you know he's not eating during the day, what can you assume? He's probably eating at night. So that is a valid means of knowledge. And the last one is anupalabdhihi or abhava pratyaksha. This is the perception of absence. And it's a little different from the other perceptions because here you're kind quote-unquote seeing an absence. And the example you can take is if a student walks into a classroom and sees the teacher's chair empty, the student concludes that the teacher is not there. Has the student seeing anything? He or she is seeing the absence. So that's also considered a valid means of knowledge. And why is a nastika, someone who does not consider the Vedas to be a pramana, said to be blind? Because, like I said earlier, the Vedas give us means to know dharma, adharma, and finally the ultimate truth of ourselves. Coming back to the text, kah panguriha prathitaha, kah panguriha prathitaha, vrajati cha yo vardhake tirtham, vrajati cha yo vardhake tirtham, kim tirtham api cha mukhyam, kim tirtham api cha mukhyam, chittamalam yannivartayati, chittamalam yannivartayati. So kaha pratitaha, what is famous? Panguhu iha. Panguhu is a lame person, and here, iha meaning here, meaning not who is a famous lame person. The sense is even if somebody can walk, who is somebody who can walk but is considered to be lame? And the answer is yaha vrajati, the one who goes where? On a tirtham, on a pilgrimage. Cha vardhake, and but vardhake in old age, when the person is old. So such a person who waits for old age to go on a pilgrimage is compared to somebody who cannot walk. And it for obvious reasons, you know. As we grow older, we're going to have knee replacements, hip replacements, difficulty walking. So taking an arduous, and remember the tirthams in olden days, people would walk. The tirtham was on foot. Unlike today, I think you can go and see the Chardham on a helicopter. So it's not as easy. People go to undertake. Why do people go on pilgrimages and tirthams? Because the belief is that when you go and take a dip in the Ganga or you visit a holy temple, all your papas, your papa karma phalas are washed away and you gain punyam. So many of these tirtham places have become tourist spots these days. You know, you get helicopter rides, you get stores selling all kinds of things outside the temple. So somebody who undertakes this arduous, so obviously referring, you have to take into context when this text was written, when people would walk thousands of miles to go and visit a holy place. For somebody who starts a tirtham at old age is considered to be as good as being without feet. And kim tirtham api cha mukhyam. Mukhyam, what is the main place? Kim mukhyam of tirtham. What is the main place for a tirtham? Yat malam. Yat, that place, nivartayati. That place that causes the removal of. Removal of what? Chitta malam. Malam is impurity and chittam is mind. So what, that place that causes, that removes our impurity, our adharmic thoughts, our ragadveshas, that such a place is considered to be the main place of pilgrimage, a very important place. And there's a shloka in the Skanda Purana that says satsanga is the highest form of tirtham. So again, plug in for those of you who are not coming here for satsang on Sunday, Swamiji's, or watching at home. And the shloka says punyani tirthani vasanti tatra. So tatra, there, punyani tirthani, holy pilgrimages or holy places, vasanti, live or reside, holy places are there, where yatra achyutaha udara katha prasangaha. So yatra, there, where udaraha katha, best or most eloquent stories, prasangaha, are revealed or told with devotion. And whose stories? Achyutaha, of the Lord, of Krishna. Yatra eva saduhu madhusudhana eka chittaha. Yatra eva, there alone, where saduhu, where a sadhu, madhusudhana eka chittaha. Eka chitta, whose mind is one-pointed, whose mind is focused on who? Madhusudhana, another name for Krishna. So where a sadhu lives, saha deshaha paramascha pavanaha. Such a place is the most purifying. The best tirtham is the company of like-minded people. Because you're engaging in like-minded activities, you're engaging in dharmic
activities, dharmic sharing of knowledge which helps us be on the spiritual path.
Kim smartavyam purushaihi, kim smartavyam purushaihi, harinama sadana yavani bhasha, harinama sadana yavani bhasha, kohinavvachya sudhiya, paradoshaschanrutam tadvat, paradoshaschanrutam tadvat. So kim smartavyam purushaihi, kim smartavyam, what is to be remembered, by who purushaihi, by people,
sada, always, harinama, name of the Lord, name of Lord Krishna, na yavani bhasha, yavani literally means Greek, and bhasha is a language, and literal meaning in ancient times is language of the foreigners. So what language we are communicating is Yavani Bhasha, according in ancient culture. But it was important, why Yavani Bhasha, these foreign languages were considered not to pursue them, because of the importance of preserving Sanskrit. Sanskrit the scriptures are in the language of Sanskrit. Here we can take it, instead of taking it as a foreign language, we can just interpret to mean Yavani Bhasha, that which is useless talk or gossip. So instead of remembering Harinama, instead of remembering God, we can, if we are engaged in gossip, remember our four W's and two H. Why go there when you can be thinking of the Lord? Just imagine if you are thinking something negative, if you are thinking something negative about somebody, how do you feel? Does it uplift you? Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm thinking really badly about this person. No, right? It pulls you down. It dampens your mood. It dampens your spirit. Versus thinking about God, there's absolutely no... It's not even a point for discussion, right? It's a moot point. So thinking about God uplifts us also. And the next half of the verse, he kaha na vachyaha. Kaha na vachyaha. What is not to be spoken, sudhiya, by good people, by wise people, by a mature person. And the answer is, para doshaha, dosha is faults or limitation, para of others, cha and anritam, and untruths. Both of them tadvat equally. So not to be speaking about others faults and not to be speaking untruths. And it's interesting, many times when we speak about other people's faults, how often do we tell it to their face? Of course, if it's a very close person, you'll tell it to their face when they don't want to hear it. But most of the time, when we're talking about somebody else, it's behind their backs, right? If you speak behind their backs, how are you helping them get out of this quality or bad trait? No help. So not to talk about limitations of others and not to talk untruths. There is a Subhashita, which says, Kala, it's a great metaphor. So it says, Kala sarshapa matrani parachidrani pashyati. Kalaha is a wicked person or an adharmic person. Pashyati sees. What does he see? Parachidrani. Chidram means the same as dosham, fault or defects of others. Parachidrani pashyati. And what kind of faults? Sarshapa matrani. Sarshapa is a mustard seed. So a fault which is merely like a mustard seed, an adharmic person is able to see that or is looking for that. On the other hand, atmano atmanaha bilva matrani pashyan pashyat na api na pashyati. So, na atmanaha pashyati, he does not see. Atmanaha is just a reflexive pronoun, not Satchidananda Atma, but in himself. He does not see the flaws in himself or herself. Bilva matrani pashyan na api pashyati. So, even though bilva is a fruit, I think Lord Shiva, important for Lord Shiva, I've not seen a bilva fruit. It's apparently it's much bigger than a mustard seed. So even though Atmani, there are flaws as big as the bilba fruit and are easily visible, Atmani, in himself or herself, this adharmic or kalaha focuses on the mustard-size faults of others. So, lesson for us, let's try and see the bilva-sized defects and flaws in ourselves first before we point out to the mustard small ones in microscopic, really, in somebody else. Kim sampadyam manujaihi Vidya vittam balam yashav punyam. Vidya vittam balam yashav punyam. So, kim sampadyam, what is to be earned or what is to be collected, manujaihi, by people. And there are four things mentioned. Vidya, five. Vidya, knowledge. Vittam, wealth. Balam, strength. Yashas, fame. And punyam, merit, spiritual merit. And sometimes a spiritual aspirant might ask, these are all worldly things, right? Worldly, either this worldly or next worldly. Is it okay to be focusing on these outwardly things? And I have to remind you maybe in the first or second class we saw, Hinduism has, there is not one goal, one pursuit in life, but four. We have four purusharthas: dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So we can, using dharmic activities, we can gain artha, wealth, or security. For what? To please our desires, to fulfill our kamas, to fulfill our desires. But the ultimate goal, we can do all this, but it's important to have the ultimate goal of moksha, gaining which, moksha or freedom, gaining which there's no more seeking, no more needing to fulfill any desire. And there's the first anuvaka of the chamakam, rudram chamakam, those who chant this. Chamakam literally comes from cha me, and to me. So the first whole anuvaka of the chamakam, which is a Vedic hymn from the Krishna Yajurveda, is a prayer for basic necessities of life, for physical health, for mental clarity. Because if we don't have a fit body and a mind, just for worldly pursuits, how are we going to be able to pursue moksha, the ultimate truth? So there's no harm. In this chamakam, I'll just read chant first. Vajascha me, prasavascha me, prayatischa me. So give me effort, give me vigor, give me intelligence. So it's asking. And this is a Vedic hymn, several thousand years old. So no harm in asking for vittam, for wealth, balam, yashas, vidya. Of course, when I say asking, it means you have to put in the right effort first, right? You just go around the mall asking somebody to give you this, they're going to call the cops on you. Okay. Kasarva guna vinashi, lobha, shatrushchakaha, kamaha. So kaha, Vinashi, who is or what destroys, who is the destroyer of what? Sarva gunaha, all good qualities. And the answer is lobha, greed. Greed is like quicksand. You know, I think that's what it's called, right? When you step into quicksand, you're just sucked down like a sinkhole or a pot, not a pothole, but a really big hole. Greed is compared to that because it blinds our discernment, it blinds our viveka, our capacity to distinguish right from wrong, because the greed overwhelms our emotions. And there's a Subhashita which says, Atitrishna na kartavyaha, one should not indulge in excessive greed. Trishnam na eva parityajet, nor should one give up all desires. Of course, it's not talking to this audience because of none of us have desires. Can anybody even give up all desires? Not happening, right? But the metaphor it says is ati trishna abhibhutasya shikha bhavati mastake. Ati trishna abhibhutasya, one who has excessive greed, shikha bhavati mastake. Shikha is a flame. Mastake, mastake means on the head. A flame, bhavati, appears on the head. What does that mean? For somebody who has excessive greed, there's a literal flame on the head? No. What it means is such a person is like one whose head is on fire, whose head is caught on fire. One who is overwhelmed, overtaken, this greed overtakes every aspect of that such a person's life, and he or she is running around everywhere looking to fulfill them in whatever means, dharmic or adharmic. So the fire takes over, the fire on the head takes over, and the person is finally destroyed. And the second half of the verse, shatruscha kaha, who is an kaha shatruhu, who is an enemy? And the answer is kamaha, desire. And I have to remind you of desire in context we have said before. So if you have a desire for tea or coffee, it's not a bad thing, right? Of course, excessive desire can lead to health problems. But we have to remind ourselves about the definition of binding desire versus non-binding desire. And many of you have heard it many times. A binding desire is one whose fulfillment, whose non-fulfillment makes us suffer. Did I say that right? Yeah. A binding desire is one whose non-fulfillment makes us suffer. And there is a shloka in the Bhagavatam which says, which compares this, another metaphor, na jatu kamaha kamanam upabhogena shamyati. Kamanam, for people who have these excessive binding desires, na jatu, not at any time, never, kamaha shamyati, desire is quelled, quenched, or satisfied, upabhogena, by the enjoyment or by the fulfilling of these binding desires. And it's comparing it to what? Havisha Krishna Vartma Eva Bhuyaha Evabhivardate. So Eva, like Krishna Vartma Eva. Eva, like Krishna Vartma. Krishna Vartma is a black fire, like a fire. Abhivardate grows even more. Bhuyaha, again and again, grows further. Indeed, Havisha by havis or ghee. So when you add fire to ghee to a fire, it doesn't quell down, right? It doesn't go down. It becomes bigger. It consumes that ghee and becomes even bigger. So desire is like that. The more you supply it with more desire, with more greed, it just becomes bigger and bigger, bigger. And thinking, so desire again is not the enemy, but thinking that fulfilling a desire will give us permanent peace and happiness, is really being ignorant, comes out of ignorance. And that's a good place to stop.
Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, ma amrutangamaya. Om shanti 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 harihi om shri gurubhyo namaha harihi om.
Thank you all for coming.